the Republicans to wake up. The Republican Party right now is not led by conservatives. There's a population out there that has to be told the truth. We have to. Do it live!
Now, from the left coast, it's another podcast edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Peter B. is curious, opinionated, and relentless in pursuit of the truth like a honeybee drawn to pollen. He's an independent progressive, ready to sting Republicans and Democrats alike when they deserve it. After years in commercial radio, Peter B. welcomes you to this audio adventure in news and politics with no corporate filter. Listeners support this program, and you can help at peterbcollins.com. Here's your humble host, Peter B.
Your host is humbled by the support of great listeners, and we name names, including Faith Peoples, Kathleen Emmer, Cameron Troxell, and Joe Kells. They voluntarily subscribe to this program, and if you'd like to help out, you can do it too. The links are on my homepage at peterbcollins.com, and our voluntary subscriptions start at just $5 a month. Today, Brad Friedman shares a blockbuster investigative story behind the scenes at a Koch Brothers confab. Actually, I think the Koch Brothers want to buy the world. And I think they revel in the idea of getting little people, the middle class and working families in this country fighting one another. It is a class war. It's underway. And unfortunately, in my view, the upper class is winning. And Brad Friedman, who is the citizen journalist at bradblog.com, has put together a powerful two-part series that's published at Mother Jones Magazine's website, motherjones.com. And you can capture it all linked at bradblog.com. Brad, thanks for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here, Peter, and it's interesting. You share something in common with Charles Koch.
Yeah, what's that?
You read off the names of your donors, of your donors at the top of the show.
Oh, that's, I wasn't ready for that. You nailed me.
Now, and I'm hoping that many of them have given you more than $1 million over the past 12 months.
Oh, I would love that, but we work in much smaller denominations.
I see.
And we don't get confused about the difference between a million and a billion.
Yes, I know. Well, listen, when you're worth $22 billion, it's an easy mistake to make. A billion here, a million there, you know. That's what it is for these guys.
Now, a quick recap. The brothers Koch, David and Charles, each worth, according to Forbes magazine, about $22 billion, and they sit atop a diversified organization called Koch Industries that is involved in many different kinds of extraction, polluting industries, service industries, and they have surfaced in the last few years as extremely influential. The seed money and some of the additional money that brought us the Tea Party movement and organizations like Dick Armey's group and others in Washington that are fueling this largely phony Tea Party political operation in this country. And earlier this year, a spoof phone call surfaced between a person purporting to be one of the Koch brothers and Scott Walker, the new Republican governor who is causing so much mayhem in the state of Wisconsin. But what you have here are actual voices of the Koch brothers and the people who toady up to them. And so during this program, you're going to share with us the sound clips from this remarkable gathering in Vail, Colorado this summer. Give us a little scene setter about Vail and about the security precautions taken by the Koch brothers to try to keep, well, somebody like you from coming into possession of actual recordings of their meeting.
Yeah, indeed. It was a remarkable, and I should add, secret meeting. And I should also add, just to your background on the Koch brothers and their, you know, $22 billion apiece and their funding of Americans for Prosperity, which David Koch is still the CEO of, by the way, still the chair there.
Mm-hmm.
all of that money, it should be noted, was not necessarily brought to them by their hard work and their good old American spirit, but by their fortunate birth and the inheritance from their father.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they inherited this oil and chemical conglomerate. So I think that's important just to keep in mind as we move forward in this discussion. They were born lucky.
Yeah.
With that in mind, they hold these biannual seminars twice a year, these super secret seminars where they get together, raise funds, plot political strategy. They invite the corporate barons of the country, at least the right-leaning, far-right-leaning corporate barons, out to these events to raise money. And in this case, to plot the 2012 election strategy. Now, normally, these meetings are completely secret, and we have never heard inside these Koch brothers seminars until now, until the exclusive audio tape I released this week. But we only began really even hearing about these meetings at all a few months ago when word of the January meeting, they had their winter meeting in Palm Springs, Rancho Mirage, actually, near Palm Springs, had leaked out onto the Internet. Think Progress's Lee Fong had actually obtained a copy of an invitation of the previous year's seminar in Colorado, and it detailed exactly what goes on at these seminars, who the type of people are that are invited and who come by, talking about, the right-wing big shots, superstars, folks mm-hmm. like Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, all kinds of Republican governors, and, of course, United States Supreme Court justices like Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia, both of whom who have been at past events, Koch brothers seminars, and participating in all of the political strategizing and fun. So we learned about that back before the January event, and that led to a lot of protests and so forth outside the Palm Springs event.
Mm-hmm.
This one in June in Colorado near Vail was a lot more, a lot quieter because word did not leak out about that event, the date or the place, because they keep that all confidential, until just before the event when some press up in Virginia noticed that Bob McDonald, the Republican governor up there, had put the event on his public calendar.
Mm-hmm.
That's how word got out just days before the event. We eventually came to learn that Bob McDonald was going, Florida Governor Rick Scott, Texas Governor, and now Republican presidential hopeful Rick Perry was also there. At the time, he had not yet declared his intention to run for president.
And didn't they get the memo that said you're supposed to put on your official calendar, I'm walking on the Appalachian Trail with Rick Sanford?
That old trick. You know what? It was actually the way we found out that guys like Rick Perry were going is because the media started tracking the tail numbers of some of their big corporate sponsors on their private jets.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they found out that Rick Perry was going, because one of his big corporate sponsors had a private jet that was going from Texas to Colorado that weekend, and then they pressed his office about it and got the admission that indeed Rick Perry was going.
Let's just take a moment here to praise the plane spotters, because they helped us understand the so-called torture taxis, the rendition program, and two guys from the Bay Area published a book about the torture taxis that were based on plane spotters who would sit at an airport and watch these planes come in and track the tail numbers and then share them via the Internet. And this became a way for private citizens to figure out what the government was up to by matching the planes with the FAA registration. And in some cases, they could see those registrations changing from one straw person or entity to the next as a way of obscuring the government's use of these aircraft. So I just want to single out the people who sit at runways for hours and capture that information, because it is very useful.
Well, no doubt when Rick Perry becomes president, that will all change, and that will become proprietary information that the public will no longer be able to learn about. In fact, that information about private plane tail numbers also was very useful in our Mike Connell story from years ago.
That's right.
Who ended up dying in his private plane, crashing. But that was one of the ways that we had learned that he was having problems with his aircraft prior to his eventual tragic death, however that death came about. So, again, yes, it can be very useful, that that little trick.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing I'd like to point out here is that we have an annual encampment here in Northern California put on by a murky old money group in San Francisco called the Bohemian Club. And they have what's called the Bohemian Grove, which is up northwest on the near the coast in Mendocino County. And every summer, they go camp out there, and they put on plays in drag, and a lot of powerful people show up. But there's no indication that at the Bohemian Club that they are advancing a specific agenda. I'm sure that when Henry Kissinger gets together with Bob Gates, they talk about more than the wives and grandchildren. But the Koch brothers' events really have a very specific agenda. And in the case of this meeting in Vail this summer, it was raising money to blow Barack Obama out of the White House.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were very specific on the tape in their goals, everything they were trying to do. The people who spoke, certainly the brothers, Charles and David Koch. And if you look at the list of those who came, now I haven't looked at the Bohemian Grove Club you discuss, but we are talking, Gavin Aronson at Mother Jones posted a companion piece along with the part one of my article at Mother Jones, because one of the things that happened, as we mentioned earlier, was Charles Koch read off the names of those who had given more than $1 million to their political machine over the past year. And Gavin went through and figured out who the heck all of these people were, explained their backgrounds, and posted an article called The Million Dollar Donors Club. While they all gave more than $1 million, most of the folks on these lists are billionaires. And frankly, $1 million is chump change. And, his article lists all of the money that these folks have given to right-wing political causes, at least that we know about, at least that he was able to find, in public lists and so forth. But that money that he lists for each of these donors is pretty much small change compared to the $1 million that, or more, that Charles Koch has revealed through these tapes that all of these folks gave. I mean, this is an extraordinary amount of money, an extraordinary amount of dark money that does not need to be disclosed, unlike a $5,000 donation to a candidate or something. These folks can now, thanks to the Citizens United decision, who we can thank Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, past Koch Brothers seminars attendees, we can thank them for this decision that now allows absolutely unlimited money to be used in political elections and campaigns like this. So they can give as much money as they want. They can keep it all a secret. That was clearly the intention of the Koch brothers. As a matter of fact, at one point on the tapes, you've got the MC for both nights of this event, a fellow by the name of Kevin Gentry, who is a Koch executive who sort of runs these Koch seminars. He's the MC, and he's telling folks, as he's trying to raise still more money from them, that, give him a call. There is, quote, anonymity we can help protect. So he has promised, they're going to help them retain their anonymity. Of course, maybe they should have thought about that before Charles went up and read by name all of these donors, some 32 folks or families who gave more than $1 million. Well, so much for the anonymity there, because, we got the audio tape. Despite their great attempts, efforts they went to, by the way, to try to keep anybody from doing that, as you alluded to, these huge speakers around the pavilion of this tent where they were having a dinner that was blasting pink noise into the mountains to, confound long-range parabolic microphones. Clearly, they wanted this to be kept a secret, particularly on the first night, I suspect to help keep a secret as to who was their opening night keynote speaker. But they certainly went to great lengths to keep it all private, but in this case, at least, it didn't work, did it?
Now, Brad, I respect your right to keep confidential sources confidential, so tell us what you're willing to tell us about the source of this very exclusive recording.
Pretty much nothing. Next question. We call it this an insider source. That's pretty much all that I can say, because we don't want this source to get in trouble. Yeah. But obviously, I went out of my way to vet, you know, this material very, very thoroughly, as did the folks at Mother Jones, their attorneys, obviously, you know, which, listen, in the post-James O'Keefe days, you know, of hoaxsters and liars and fakers like James O'Keefe, who I helped out, you know, for his fake videos that were messed with and doctored to represent something other than they really were. You can imagine I was none too careful there. That, along with the fact that you may recall, I was a target of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and $12 million campaign, or at least a plot for a campaign, to discredit me by planting fake material and using fake personas to try to smear and discredit people like me. So, yes, I was very careful before using any of this material to make sure that it was all on the up and up. And since we've released it, clearly it is on the up and up, because the Kochs are seething, as CNN's Situation Room reported, and the keynote speaker, who I don't think we've revealed yet, on that first night, his office has in fact confirmed a lot of the material that was in those audio tapes where he was heard speaking. So nobody's really questioning the veracity of these tapes. And that's it. So I can't tell you much more about the source.
Well, all I can say is we want to bless the creators of digital cameras and digital recorders.
There you go.
I have a $45 Sony device that's the size of a granola bar that records up to 4 hours of audio, and it's pretty damn good. And you can plug a professional microphone into it to enhance that. So the technology is there, and whoever your source is, bless him or her.
Well, I will also say this, that, you know, there was about 300 estimated invited guests at these events, at this dinner. I'm pretty sure that just about every one of them had a cell phone in their pocket with recording capabilities. So you never know, therefore, you know, if there's something you want to keep a secret, perhaps you should think about whether you should be saying it or doing it in the first place, to be honest.
So the audio you're about to hear is recorded under these circumstances, and so at times it'll be a little fuzzy, fading in and out. I encourage you to use your own technology, turn those earbuds up as loud as you need to capture what's going on, and Brad will give us a real-time translation of anything that we're unable to pick out from the audio. So, Brad, why don't you set us up here for Charles Koch and his introductory remarks.
Yes. Well, and this is, of course, the one that seems to have gotten the most headlines since breaking this report, because it's probably the easiest one to cover. It's sort of media chum. But you've got Charles Koch welcoming everyone to the event on the first night of the event before dinner. Later on, the keynote speaker will come. But here he is welcoming all the guests and describing exactly what he sees as the challenge ahead in the 2012 election against President Barack Obama.
We have, as Saddam Hussein, this is the mother of our wars we've got over the next 18 months, for the life or death of this country. So I'm not going to do this to put any pressure on anyone here, mind you. This is not pressure. But if this makes your heart feel glad and you you want to be more forthcoming, then so be it.
So how do we connect Barack Obama and the 2012 elections with Saddam Hussein? Is he just citing that phrase, mother of all wars?
Well, you know what? We have the complete audio at bradblog.com. People will, and along with the full transcript of all of Charles's remarks, I'd invite folks to check it out and decide for themselves, because it seems quite clear to me that Charles Koch is, in alluding to Saddam Hussein, is equating him with Barack Obama. Now, since we've released this, the Koch folks have said, oh, no, that's not what we were doing at all. Charles was not comparing Saddam Hussein to Barack Obama. He was just, quoting, I guess what they were trying to say at Koch Industries was that he wasn't comparing Saddam to Obama. He was just quoting Saddam favorably when Saddam said, we have the mother of all wars. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. And in fact, I tried to get them to clarify this before the story was released. Several times I asked specifically the Koch folks for comment on that specific phrase. What did he mean by alluding to Saddam Hussein and the mother of all wars? And instead of answering and clarifying in advance, all they would do was point me. They gave me a link to a page on the Koch Industries website explaining what these seminars were about. One paragraph explaining what they were, but nothing about the comments that Charles made. They waited until after the story came out, and then of course they claimed that we've taken it out of context, which is hard to do when you're posting the entire transcript and the full audio. But somehow we've taken it out of context. Somehow this is left wing groups who are trying to attack the Kochs. I'm not sure which left-wing groups they're talking about, but, there it is. You can check out their denial. You can check out my report. You can listen to the full, not-out-of-context audio and transcript and decide for yourself. I think it's pretty clear, but that's just my opinion.
And just what you described there, Brad, you're setting up a standard that Andrew Breitbart will never be able to match.
Indeed. My friend Andrew, yes.
All right, next we have an additional comment from Charles Koch, and this is where he's shaking the tree, trying to grab more money from the wealthy people in his midst. Let's listen.
What I want to do is recognize not all of our great partners, but those partners who have given more than a million.
Well, this kind of talk just reminds me of George W. Bush cozying up to donors back in 2000 when he said, you're my base, the haves and the have-mores.
Yeah, that's it. These are the have-mores. A little billionaire humor there for you from Charles Koch, welcoming everyone, welcoming all the billionaires and corporate titans and barons and inheritance babies out to the Ritz-Carlton in Bachelor Gulch, Colorado.
So next up, we're going to hear from Judge Andrew Napolitano, who appears on the Fox News Channel. I've watched him a few times, and he's unpredictable because while he is a clear conservative, he has streaks of independence from the Republican Party, and in particular has some libertarian instincts related to the Constitution and the rollback of our rights in recent years. That said, he was pretty much on message at the Koch Fest.
Well, he was and he wasn't. I mean, there were times, and you're right, I mean, I think the key here is his libertarianism. There were times when he was really off the reservation, in regard to the Republican message. I mean, he was beating up George Bush at times, not exactly what you would expect from this crowd, and so some of his comments were better received than others, and I'm not sure which clips you have queued up there, but it was a fiery and interesting speech, and has not gotten the attention, frankly, that I think it deserves, because there was a lot of pretty noteworthy items that he had to say out there on the second night. And this was the second night's dinner. He was the closing speaker out at the Koch brothers event in Vail.
Here's where he talks about what they call Second Amendment options.
We all know these rights. The right to think as you wish. The right to say what you think. I've often told O'Reilly that his favorite right should be the right to develop your personality however you want. The right to publish what you're going to say. The right to worship or not to worship. The right to shoot at the government if it is taken over by tyrants. Now, if anybody tells you the Second Amendment was written to protect hunters, they are intentionally distorting history. It was written to let us attack tyrants.
So are we talking about armed class warfare or a revolution from the top 2%?
The right to shoot at the government. You'll have to decide, you know, what he is exactly calling for there. But, you know, I think that might have been a shocking turn of phrase even as much as a year or so ago. But now, you know, with the Sharon Engel and her Second Amendment remedies, and if we can't win at the ballot box, then we'll use the bullet box, you know, this kind of talk.
Sarah Palin,
using
a target on a mailer against Gabby Gifford shortly before she was shot. Lock and load is one of her favorite phrases. And yet when Jimmy Hoffa at a rally in Detroit on Labor Day talked clearly about the electoral process and throwing out the right-wingers, the Tea Party people, whom he called sons of bitches, that was described as violent rhetoric.
Yeah, and well, one of the reasons they were able to do that is because they specifically dishonestly edited that videotape, because that's what those guys do. I mean, right before he said we need to take out these sons of bitches,
right,
he said, you know, next November we need to vote, we need to take out these sons of bitches, whatever it was. So they took out the part about, you know, next November we all need to vote. It was specifically meant to make him look bad, which is why when I do a story like this, I try to release absolutely as much material as I can, transcripts and audio and everything else, so that I can't be accused of taking these things out of context or of deceptively editing the tape. So that's a pretty clear comment from Andrew Napolitano there, and folks can make of it what they think.
Here's another clip from the judge regarding confiscation of property by the government.
I'm afraid the governor is going to take the property and the freedom of everybody in this room. The government should fear that we will take its power away from it and put it into the hands of worthy custodians of our freedom.
That was a common theme at the seminar, you know, scaring people that they are losing their freedoms, their property is going to be taken away. This is a fight for the life and death of our country, and you know, if they don't pony up more money, why everything they hold dear will be gone by this rascal. Barack Obama, actually not rascal, this, you know,
socialist, Kenyan, Islamic, yeah.
Yeah.
And allow me to inject a little opinion here, Brad, because this is so fatuous and ludicrous, because Barack Obama has been busy protecting the interests of the people in that room, including protecting Republicans from investigation or prosecution for wrongdoing during the Bush and Cheney administration. He's protected the interests of Wall Street with bailouts. And while they rail against Dodd-Frank and the modest restrictions that it places on banking behavior, he didn't attempt to reinstall the Glass-Steagall firewall that was there until 1998 or 1999. And so it just is at such odds with reality to hear them whining about the threat that they see posed by Barack Obama, who, from my liberal perspective, has done so little to advance the interests of working families and the middle class and those who have, it's objectively proven how much money has been squeezed out of working people in this country while the rich have gained incredibly over the last 20 years and in particular the last 10 years because of the Bush tax cuts.
Well, that's right. I mean, over the past, in 2010, it was a record year, all-time record year for corporate profits in this country. So I'm not really sure what their complaint is with Barack Obama, other than he's got a D by his name. You know, if Obama would just replace that with an R, these folks, I suspect, would love him. I used to say that, you know, Bill Clinton was the greatest Republican president of our day. That is until Barack Obama came around. So, yeah, you're spot on, and their complaints are silly, but that's what they want to do. And I guess even someone who's gone so far to the right, like Barack Obama, is not far enough to the right for what has become of the 2011 modern day Republican Party at this point.
Now, let's assume that our listeners so far haven't read the show file, haven't read the Mother Jones or the Brad Blog posts, and don't know who the special guest was who you're about to reveal. But first, I want to pass out some virtual cigars and set the scene for after dinner at the Koch Brothers Billionaire Fest. I hadn't thought about it, but this Pink Floyd song is almost as colorful as the introduction offered by David Koch.
Yes, indeed. I'll send it to my source so they can pass it on to the Kochs next year for a recommendation for house music.
So reveal to us, who was it who secretly left his state, flew to Colorado, and flew back to his state, and only revealed that he had attended this Koch brothers meeting in Vail after he was outed by the media?
That's right. Outed by the media being me, I guess, and Mother Jones just yesterday. So this fellow went for, where are we here? I think more than 2 months keeping his appearance completely secret from his voters and from the local media. And that was superstar Republican Governor Chris Christie. And what's really interesting, at least to me, about this is, I can't say for sure that it was a plan, because they've stopped answering my questions once I had mentioned that I wanted to know about the governor's trip to Colorado, which was not on his public calendar. But once I brought that up, they stopped returning my calls over there for some reason. But so I don't know if it was on purpose as a ruse or not, but interestingly, he appeared, Chris Christie appeared on NBC's Meet the Press that morning, June 26, and everybody, you know, in the nation, of course, saw him. He immediately left the Meet the Press, got on a plane, hopped out to Colorado, greeted and met and hung with the billionaires, gave this barn burner, this stem winder of a keynote speech, got back on a plane and flew back to New Jersey. And in the morning, he appeared on three different cable news shows in studio, live in Manhattan that next morning. So, you know, if you were in the New Jersey media or one of his voters, you would never really think that he left. You know, he was on TV on Sunday, Meet the Press. He was right there in New York City Monday morning. And, you know, I think that the media, you know, never even bothered to consider the fact that he might have gone out to this meeting, because, well, there he was, you know, Sunday and Monday. He's right there in New York. He certainly didn't go to Colorado. So it was a pretty good ruse, and it seems to have held for about 2 months until my story broke just yesterday.
And we're about to hear David Koch with warm words of introduction for the big man, Chris Christie. And listen carefully as he describes a private meeting that they had held 5 months prior. And this is a real meeting between a billionaire and a governor who is fulfilling his agenda. Now, I can't establish the quid, the pro, and the quo, but I can establish that they met, and I can establish that Chris Christie is doing all of the items that we see replicated in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Indiana, and Ohio, where Republican governors with largely controlled legislatures are able to ram through bills that roll back collective bargaining rights for public employees, that cut pensions, that cut programs related to that were addressing either green jobs or climate change, and in Christie's case, cutbacks on two key programs in the state of New Jersey, including an ambitious project for a new linkage, a tunnel, between New Jersey and New York that he bailed out of. All of these cheered by the plutocrats who are answering these days to the Koch brothers. So here is David Koch introducing Chris Christie.
It is a real privilege for me to be asked to say a few words on behalf of Governor Chris Christie. 5 months ago, we met in my New York City office and spoke, just the two of us, for about 2 hours on his objectives and successes in correcting many of the most serious problems of the New Jersey state government. At the end of our conversation, I said to myself, I'm really impressed and inspired by this man. He is my kind of guy.
My kind of guy.
Yeah, that's going to leave a mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
David Koch's my kind of guy is Chris Christie. And I've noticed in the media frenzy that has taken place since my report, everybody is focusing on that line, my kind of guy. If Christie decides to run for higher office at some point, whether it's a vice president this year or president in 4 years, I suspect that comment from David Koch calling him my kind of guy is probably going to haunt him for some time to come. He also calls him a true political hero, and yes, reveals that they had met 5 months prior, which is important, not just for the points you mentioned about the cutting of pensions and benefits, the stripping in New Jersey of collective bargaining rights for public workers, which was also a part of the campaign. But 1 month prior to the Vail event, May 26th, the event in Vail was June 26th. On May 26th, Governor Chris Christie came out and kind of stunned the state with his announcement that he was unilaterally withdrawing from from what they call the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI for short. REGGI is a 10-state pact, an agreement between 10 northeastern states to create a cap and trade market to curb global warming gases, pollutants, and to use that money to invest into clean energy. Well, out of nowhere, Christie decides he's going to withdraw from REGGI that was put in place by his predecessor, John Corzine. This is something that the Kochs and Americans for Prosperity, who they fund, have been pushing for months and months and months. And finally, they got it when Chris Christie said, I'm pulling out. Now, there were some interesting conflicts that I didn't have time to go into in the Mother Jones story. I may do a follow-up on this because when Christie came out and pulled out of the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, he also committed some blasphemy for the global warming denier movement, which is, you know, headed by the Kochs. Essentially, he said that he has talked to scientists and, you know, there is a very clear consensus that man is involved with global warming. And he also announced new initiatives for solar, for offshore wind. So a lot of stuff that would have gotten, you know, guys like Rush Limbaugh's hackles up. I mean, you remember when Mitt Romney came out recently and acknowledged that global warming was real. Rush Limbaugh went on the air the next day and said, bye-bye nomination. That was enough to knock Mitt Romney out of the game as far as Rush Limbaugh was concerned, just, you know, acknowledging that global warming was real and being helped along by man. Well, Chris Christie is Rush Limbaugh's favorite. He's been, you know, yelling and screaming for him to get into the presidential race now for months. Interestingly, I don't know, maybe Rush Limbaugh didn't read the comments that Chris Christie made when he pulled out of Reggie about global warming being real. So that's a real conflict in one sense that Christie would have with the Kochs, even while he was essentially doing exactly what they want, which is to pull out of Reggie.
So, well, but I would argue, yeah. I understand what you're saying, yeah. And it's a very clear contradiction.
Yeah.
However, they would probably take the position that he can say anything he wants, believe anything he wants. He's delivering for us. He pulled the plug on this thing, and we don't care if he believes in climate science. We would prefer, of course, that he toe our line like Rick Perry does. And if he wants to double down on Darwin and evolution and you know, feed the Bible thumpers at the same time, that's okay with us, too.
Yeah.
But I think their bottom line is a business bottom line, and he delivered for them, and that's why he's David Koch's kind of guy.
Well, that's right. I mean, so in other words, he will you know, do what they want him to do. He'll say one thing and he'll basically do another, and that's what he does seem to be doing here. Nonetheless, it's interesting that Christie does not mention anything at all about Reggie or climate change or anything else in his own remarks, which I suspect was probably wise, because when David announced that Christie had pulled out of Reggie, that got one of the biggest cheers of the night from the crowd out there at the Koch meeting.
Well, listen, here's David Koch.
Another example of Governor Christie's commitment to the free enterprise system is that only a few weeks ago, he announced that New Jersey would be withdrawing from the Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which would have raised energy costs, reduced economic growth, and led to very little, if any, benefit for the environment.
Well, those are unproven statements, but under the First Amendment, he's entitled to his opinion, however misguided.
Well, they're actually wrong statements. In fact, you heard how the crowd just went wild.
Sure.
When he announced that he had pulled out of Reggie, but they're wrong statements. In fact, PolitiFact in Texas looked into the cost. I think David Koch there says it would cost New Jersey,
raise energy costs, reduce economic growth.
Right. Well, it would increase the energy costs for a average family of four in New Jersey, as PolitiFact found, by 42 cents per month.
Mm.
The cost of a postage stamp. That is, the cost that would have increased, at least for consumers, for regular people. For Koch Industries, on the other hand, it might have been a lot more expensive. So I think that David was thinking about himself and his own interests and his own belief that he has the right to pollute and kill the rest of us and destroy the planet. And that's what he was talking about, because the cost to New Jerseyans would be, or New Jerseyites, whatever that is, would be next to nothing per month. And it would, in fact, improve the environment out there. So there you go.
All right. Next, we're going to hear from Governor Christie himself. And do put your bullshit detector on mute, because...
Oh, actually, you know what? Before you get to Christie, let me just toss in one more point here that's important.
Sure.
Because AP has been all over this since yesterday. They're looking at this meeting with Koch that has been revealed, not the Colorado meeting, but also the one that took place 5 months earlier, and tying it to Christie's removal from Reggie. And they've got the environmentalists out there are now up in arms, pointing to that tape that you just played as the, quote, smoking gun to prove that Christie and the Kochs have been in bed all along. So keep an eye for that story, because I think that's going to develop more.
All right.
Sorry to cut you off there.
That's all right. Here comes Governor Christie, and these first few lines are pretty precious. Let me start that again.
No one is here today for self-promotion or for self-aggrandizement or for self-enrichment. Everybody who's here for this weekend is here because they know that the opportunity that was presented to us as Americans is one of the most special gifts that we'll ever, ever be given. Not to be guaranteed anything, except that opportunity. Make the most of the God-given talents that we have been blessed with.
and combine that with the great opportunity that America presents to make our lives something special. We want that same thing for our children and for our grandchildren. And we're here because we know that it is no longer a sure thing if it ever was. And in fact, under this administration, it is at greater risk than it's been in my lifetime.
So once again, the theme advanced by the Koch brothers, by Judge Napolitano, picked up on by Chris Christie, that Obama represents this great threat to the American system of opportunity and the way of life of mostly those who mostly inherited their wealth. Certainly some of these are self-made millionaires and billionaires, but many of them, simply like the Koch brothers, were lucky to be born to wealthy parents.
I guess that's what he means by the great opportunity that this country has given us, the opportunity to be born to rich parents, as mm-hmm. was the case with many of the folks in that room. That's actually a clip from fairly late in the speech. It was about an hour-long speech, and it's amusing somewhat because he starts it out by saying that nobody's here for self-aggrandizement. This was after about 30 minutes of his singing his own praises about what he had done out there in New Jersey, the great successes he's had, how he snookered Democrats, at least the key ones, the leaders in the House and the Assembly and the Senate, into going along with him into cutting these benefits. He called, at one point he says during that speech, "I can't believe how stupid these people are." You know, again, he thought nobody outside of that room was going to be listening, clearly. You know, because since that speech, there has been a firestorm over the last 24 hours has erupted in New Jersey with calls for the Speaker of the Assembly to step down. She, in turn, has come out and said that what Christie was saying out there in Colorado was all a bunch of lies. She said, "I seriously think he may be mentally deranged." So, I mean, this has become an all-out war. But, you know, he did a hell of a job in that speech, I got to tell you, leading up to that moment. I mean, he had really wowed that crowd. It was a hell of an entertaining speech. I don't know how much of it was actually true. You know, there were some points that I was able to fact check, but other stuff, you know, he was talking about inside information, how he had manipulated these Democrats into essentially bending them to his will, and how the country needs to do what he did in New Jersey, you know, which is to cut spending, pensions, benefits. He called for cuts to Medicare, to Medicaid, to Social Security. And, of course, the crowd just ate up every single moment of it.
Well, and what we're about to hear next from Chris Christie is the Republican mantra about the economy and about the whole tax and revenue structure. And what's missing from this, he's going to tell us that we spend too much and we borrow too much and we tax too much. You know, a lot of this is simply not true. Yes, we spend too much, but most of it has been on military and on tax cuts. And the borrowing was done to finance the tax cuts. And to say that we tax too much is simply not true when you compare the tax structure in the United States to other similar nations around the world. So let's listen to his propaganda here.
This is not hard. We spend too much. We borrow too much. We tax too much. It is time to turn those three things around. Now, pain will be inflicted when we change that. People are going to do with less. People who are used to having entitlement at a certain level will not have them at that level anymore. That's the story.
So this is a fascinating moment of condescension, because he's talking to these rich people about how they're going to inflict pain on the little people so they don't have to pay slightly more in taxes.
Yeah, it was interesting, that phrase, pain will be inflicted. almost right out of the Sopranos, speaking of New Jersey. But, you know, he didn't mention, you know, he talks about programs that some people in this room may like, but he didn't go into specifics as far as, you know, what exactly was the pain that the people in that room would have to share with the rest of the country if the changes were if the changes that he was calling for were actually made. I suspect they would feel absolutely no pain at all.
This is not a mystery. We've had task force after task force figuring out, we know the answers. They're painful answers. They're going to have to reduce Medicare benefits. They're going to have to reduce Medicaid benefits. They're going to have to raise the Social Security age. We're going to have to do these things. We're going to have to cut all kinds of other government programs that some people in this room might like. We're going to have to do it.
And, of course, he, again, is elliptical about this. We're going to have to do it. Why? To preserve the incredible levels, the, you know, astronomical levels of defense spending, to preserve the tax cuts that were ill-considered at the time they went into effect, because it was very clear that we were going to spend through the surplus that was building the legacy of the Clinton administration and add more long-term debt to the American bankroll.
You know, yeah, I might have been more impressed had he thrown in one word during that entire hour-long speech, you know, to say, and you people here are going to have to give just a little bit more. The people who have been blessed in this country, you know, to help us get back on track and help put this country back on its footing. He never said anything of that sort. Never once, you know, and listen, this guy has developed a reputation for being a straight shooter. We talked a little bit about the, you know, coming out and admitting that climate change is going on. He has come out a few weeks back and said this, you know, bullshit about Sharia law is just insane and you people, you know, need to get over it. So he will, he has, you know, called them as he sees it in the past. But in this case, I mean, he was towing the party line. He never strayed from message. And the folks in that room absolutely ate it up.
And in this next clip, he does come, he kind of shades in the direction you just described about how everybody will have to share. But when you've got billions of dollars, the idea that your Social Security is going to be cut or you're going to have to wait an extra year or Medicaid is going to be cut, you can sit there comfortable in your furs, even in Vail in the summertime, and say, well, the little people, maybe. Here, let's listen to more from Chris Christie.
I told people it's going to be painful. It's going to be difficult. But the sacrifice is going to be shared by everyone. And we're going to dig out of this hole together. And when we do, we're going to feel great about ourselves as a state again. And I think that the President of the United States would just have the guts to stand up and say to the people of this country, listen, we're in a big, big fix. And everybody's going to have to pitch in to help. But I'm going to make sure it's fair to everybody. And I'm going to make it consistent with principles that are American principles. And I'm going to work with the Republicans to make sure that we do it together. I think that's the kind of leadership we're looking for. I doubt he can provide it. I hope there's someone out there who will.
Now, this is just so separate from reality because, A, he assumes that the Republicans would work with President Obama if he said we're in a big fix and everybody's going to have to pitch in to help. And it just leaves this very twisted impression that, again, Obama is this guy who is determined to dismantle the American capitalist system. When, I'm sorry, that is so far from the truth that this is a ludicrous statement.
And when he says, again, you know, the pain will be shared by everybody. What pain? What pain are those people in that room going to feel, you know, whether they're worth, you know, $10 million, $500 million, $2 or $3 billion or more, as most of those folks were, what pain are they going to be sharing with the rest of the country? You know, I suspect you could raise the taxes for every single person in that room by, you know, 10%. And these guys, you know, wouldn't even feel it. So, you know, yeah, I think it was utterly disingenuous. And the attacks on Barack Obama, and I know that you're no fan of Obama's. I'm not particularly a fan either. But some of the shots that he was taking at him just seemed to be completely at odds with reality, as you mentioned.
So next, he really bears the clear agenda here, and this is where he talks about the steps he's already taken in New Jersey, and the next target, surprise, the teachers' union.
And so we need to do these things, and that's where we head next. We've taken care of the first two of the big things, at least for the moment, and now the third big thing is we need to take on the teachers' union once and for all, and we need to decide. Who is determining our children's future? Who is running this place, them or us? I say it's us. And we've got to go fight to do it now.
And, of course, these are code words to support diversion of public education funds to charter schools, some of which are controlled by religious conservatives, some by pro-business groups that, you know, feel that public education should be allowed to wither. And that they believe that this is a kind of Darwin or Charles Dickens set of issues, that it's a survival of the fittest, and we need to thin the herd.
Yeah, those fucking teachers are really messing up this country, aren't they?
Yep.
I mean, picking on the school marms, essentially, here, we've got to destroy them. It's just absolutely remarkable. Now, you know, a lot of this stuff he has said in various forms in his stump speeches, over the past year or two. But when he thought he wasn't going to be heard by anybody but, you know, the real, real friendlies in there, he really upped the ante. So, you know, each of these comments, many of them in any case, you know, he has made in some respect before. But once he was alone with this crowd, he really upped the ante. I don't believe he's ever said in the past, you know, we've got to take on the teachers' union once and for all. So there you have it. There is the Chris Christie agenda.
And before we finish on Governor Christie, there's one more clip I want listeners to hear. And this is where he mocks his predecessor, John Corzine. And, you know, Corzine was a Wall Street guy who made hundreds of millions of dollars. And he first invested in buying a Senate seat in New Jersey and then spent tens of millions of dollars to win the governorship. So he was hardly a man of the poor or a man of the people. Now, on political policies, he was fairly progressive considering his background. But to single out John Corzine for abuse here, I think, is pretty choice. And you're also going to hear Governor Christie say that he believes having to sleep on a cot in the governor's office would be something beneath him.
Well, you're talking about closing down the government, all this. I know what Corzine did 4 years ago. See, Corzine held a press conference, and he rolled a cot into the governor's office. And he said, I'm sorry I have to do this, because this is kind of the way he talks. I will not leave this office until this crisis is solved. I will sleep right there in that cot until this crisis is solved. So he said, now I know he did that, but let me tell you guys what's going to happen if you close down the government. You close down the government, I'm not moving any cot into this office and sleeping here. I mean, look at me. I ain't sleeping on a cot in the government's office. About sacrifice, but not that much sacrifice. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get in those black SUVs, I'm going to leave with the troopers, I'm going to go to the governor's mansion, I'm going to go upstairs, I'm going to order a pizza, I'm going to open a beer, and I'm going to watch the mess. And when you all decide to reopen the government, give me a call, but I am not raising taxes, that's it.
And he's not going to sleep on a cot.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one of the things that strikes me here is, in one sense, he's an incredibly charming fellow.
Yeah.
You know, never mind what his policies are. He's, you know, really wowed this crowd. And I would suggest, you know, there's a reason why Rush Limbaugh wants him to get in the race. Because, if I was Obama, I would be worried about only one man, frankly, entering this the race right now, and that would be Chris Christie. I think this guy would give Barack Obama a hell of a run for his money. I mean, he's really charming, he's amusing, he's likable, he's straight shooting, you know, and I don't necessarily mean all of those things as compliments, but I mean to say that I think he would be an extraordinarily formidable opponent. In truth, if he decided to get into this race, he sounds, you know, he does not sound like the Mitt Romneys and the Rick Perrys and the crazy Sarah Palins. You know, this guy would be trouble.
Yeah,
race, and there's a lot of people still wanting him to get in the game because the Republican field is still so pathetic at this point.
I take your point. He takes draconian policies and presents them in a what appears to be a common sense, pragmatic, folksy way.
Yep.
But, of course, it's all shaded based on presumptions of the very wealthy, namely that you can't raise taxes.
Yep.
And if you start with a point where we can't raise taxes on anybody in any way, particularly the rich, then you've got a loop that you can populate with a lot of ideas that make sense to people who share that premise, that, oh, we can't raise taxes.
Yeah.
But that's the false notion, and it's a real failure of the Democrats and the Obama team that they have not punctured that balloon.
And, you know, I'll tell you something else. For all of those absolutely accurate facts that you mentioned, I think a lot of the people in this country tend to vote not based on policy, but for the people they like. And, you know, when he comes across as likable, no matter what he's saying, you know, I think there's a lot of people in this country that would look at that and say, well, you know, I kind of like this guy. I'm going to vote for him and, you know, sort of not notice what he's actually saying, what he's actually promising, the kind of president he would actually be. Remember, this was a guy who was a U.S. attorney under George W. Bush for 7 years. He brags early on in the speech, the part that we didn't play, he talks about when he came into office, he claims that there was an $22 billion shortfall in that year's budget that had already been set, you know, by his predecessor. And so he discovered that he could declare a fiscal emergency and impound $22 billion in spending. He went on to say, man, I love this job, you know, because, as he said, the New Jersey governorship is the most powerful executive position in the country, constitutionally a powerful executive. He loves that unitary executive. He has executed that many times, just as George W. Bush felt he could do when he was in the White House. So, you know, there is every reason, frankly, to fear this guy. Of course, that was before some jerk came out with audio, you know, saying that David Koch calling him my kind of guy. So maybe that changes things. I don't know.
Well, and being a David Koch kind of guy gives Chris Christie plenty of advantages if he does either join the ticket as a VP this year.
Yeah.
Or I take him at his word that he doesn't want to run for president this year. But he's clearly positioning himself for the future, and with friends like the Koch brothers, well, he can go pretty far.
And he's still having meetings with folks about this. You know, if it looks like Perry's going to be the guy, and he doesn't have a chance of winning, or Mitt Romney, look for things to change. You're right. I mean, a guy like Christie, with backing of the folks like the Kochs, he could get into this game very, very late. And still be able to pull it off. So I wouldn't count out anything at this point. I'll toss in just a couple very quick thoughts on Christie before we finish up. One, he said about Obama. He was criticizing President Obama's State of the Union speech earlier in the speech, and he said that Obama has, quote, failed the fundamental test of leadership because he failed to tell the truth to the people who hired him. Well, it seems to me that Governor Christie failed to tell the truth to the people who hired him, if only evidenced by the fact that he snuck off to Colorado and didn't tell the truth about it to his own constituency for 2 months. And I suspect he never would have told them had I not outed him via this tape. So did Christie Chris Christie fail the fundamental test of leadership? I hope that local media will ask him about that. I also hope that local media will ask him, if state resources were used in this event, because I just can't believe that the state security detail was not used in some fashion on this jaunt across the country and back. And Chris Christie has a record of using state resources for his private fun.
Well, he took a chopper to see his kid's Little League game, right?
That's right.
Or a soccer game? I don't recall what it was.
This was June, the same month, by the way, earlier in the month. He took a chopper, a state helicopter, out to see his son's high school baseball game. The chopper landed in the football field. A state limo drove him the 100 yards from the chopper to the grandstand. He stayed, watched the game for just 5 innings, got back in the limo, drove back to the helicopter 100 yards away, and took that state helicopter out to meet with folks who were trying to convince him to run for president in Iowa. So, and he did not want to repay the $2,500 an hour cost of that helicopter. He said he would not do it until it was such a public pressure that he finally agreed to do it. So, he's got a record of doing this, and I sure hope the local media press him on this and to find out how much state welfare he enjoyed to go out and do this political meeting out there with the Koch brothers.
We have one more clip from Charles Koch, his closing comment, where he once again channels Saddam Hussein. Kind of bizarre.
We've had a lot of tough battles. We've lost a lot over the years, and we've won some recently. Set the stage for, as I said, the mother of all battles coming up a year from November. And I pledge to all of you who step forward, who are partnering with us, that we are absolutely going to do our utmost to invest this money wisely and get the best possible payoff for you in the future of our country.
Ah, so they're investors, and they're going to get the best possible payoff for you. So this is just another plea to help the rich get richer.
The best possible payoff. I think that really says it all, doesn't it?
It sure does. Well, Brad, I know you've been working on this for most of the summer. I want to thank you for breaking a very important story. And just before we close, I know I've seen you on CNN this week, and they did an okay job of explaining the story. What other corporate media pickups have there been, and how do you rate them?
Are you saying what other corporate media whoring have I been doing, Peter B.? Is that what you're accusing me of?
No, I'm asking if they broadcast your story and gave you credit for it.
Ah, indeed, indeed they did. They have been pretty good here, surprisingly, overall. I did the Ed show on MSNBC a couple of nights ago. Have that up at bradblog.com if you want to give it a look. I was booked, actually, the following day on both Martin Bashir and Reverend Al Sharpton on MSNBC until they either saw my performance on Ed's show and decided better of it, or decided, as they told me, and I kind of believe this, that they had decided to turn all of their programming yesterday over to a preview for the Republican debate that was also on MSNBC that night.
Well, they had to make room for the hagiographic package about Nancy Reagan. I almost puked.
Oh, brother. Oh. I'm glad I missed that one.
Oh.
So I will say this, Peter B., as ever, I will consider this interview with you. You know, the Ed show was great, the 3 or 5 or 6 minutes, whatever I had on MSNBC and on CNN's Situation Room and some of those other places. But to be able to sit down for an hour and completely go through a lot of this material, I consider this interview with you the definitive secret Koch Brothers tape interview. So thank you for having me and taking that.
Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, things go better with Coca-Cola, things go better with Coke. Life is much more fun when you're refreshed.
And Rich.
Refreshes you best.
It's the refreshingest.
Food goes better with, fun goes better with, you go better with Coke.
The real life one puts extra fun in you and everything.
Will Durst joins us in a moment with another satirical commentary here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, guys.
Will Durst here with a few quick words in the Republican debate held Wednesday night at the Ronald Reagan Library in Simi Valley. And though he was only there in spirit, Reagan must have been spinning in his grave like a rotisserie chicken in the middle of a power surge. They didn't just break his 11th commandment, "Thou shalt not speak ill of other Republicans." They stomped on it with football cleats and shoved it down a sewer grate with a broken rake handle. It was predicted to be a dogfight, and the crowd came ready for blood. Before Rick Perry could answer Brian Williams' question about executing 234 inmates on his watch, the audience applauded. When Newt Gingrich blamed the media for setting up the fight, the rest of the contestants dismissed him like an elderly aunt who wandered into a discussion on nuclear fission. Newt Gingrich, the soul of reason. Something has gone horribly awry. Here's some other highlights. Rick Perry supported his anti-science stance by comparing himself to Galileo. Don't ask. He hates cancer and called Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Not once, but three times. So apparently he thinks he can get elected without Florida. We learned Michelle Bachmann spent the last 3 weekends going to restaurants and wants to drill for oil in the Everglades. So Florida is obviously not in her plans either. John Huntsman is apparently running in the wrong party. Everybody except him looked like a fifth grader trying to fake his way through a book report on something they didn't read. Ron Paul has been mauled by the TSA, and he is not happy about it. It is impossible for Mitt Romney to be outsmugged by anyone, even a Texan. Herman Cain likes chili. The country, not the food. And the major difference between Elvis Presley and Rick Santorum is Elvis might still be alive. It had to say the big winner was Sarah Palin, who was smart enough not to attend. But that doesn't mean she won't be around next time. And on behalf of comedians everywhere, may I just say, run, Sarah, run. For the Peter B. Collins Show, I'm Will Durst.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of the Peter B. Collins Show. Please share it far and wide. Send it to the Koch brothers, and happy trails.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.